This evening, reading from Bhagavad Gita chapter 2, text 64, if I understand correctly, okay. Nice verse. Do you want to chant responsively? Do you have a book with you? Or just have good memories? Or good memories, okay. Handheld devices? Okay, good memories. All right. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Raga dvesha vimuktaistu Vishayan indriyaish charan Atma vashyair videyatma Prasadam adigachati Raga dvesha vimuktaistu Vishayan indriyaish charan Atma vashyair videyatma Prasadam adigachati. Translation: but a person free from all attachment and aversion and able to control his senses through regulative principles of freedom can obtain the complete mercy of the Lord. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. It is already explained that one may externally control the senses by some artificial process, but unless the senses are engaged in the transcendental service of the Lord, there's every chance of a fall. Although the person in full Krishna consciousness may apparently be on the sensual platform, because of his being Krishna conscious, he has no attachment to sensual activities. The Krishna conscious person is concerned only with the satisfaction of Krishna and nothing else. Therefore, he is transcendental to all attachment and aversion, attachment and detachment. If Krishna wants, the devotee can do anything which is ordinarily undesirable, and if Krishna does not want, he shall not do that which he would have ordinarily done for his own satisfaction. Therefore, to act or not to act is within his control because he acts only under the direction of Krishna. This consciousness is the causeless mercy of the Lord, which the devotee can achieve in spite of his being attached to the sensual platform. So this second half of chapter 2 is describing Buddhi Yoga. You know what Buddhi Yoga is? Buddhi Yoga. You know what Buddhi is? Intelligence. You're going like this and I'm going like this. Intelligence. And it's a special kind of intelligence. It's intelligence how to get to Krishna. Intelligence. It's transcendental intelligence. And it was characterized earlier in this chapter, verse 41, as everything within all the various diverse things that are done in the course of life, there's one purpose. That Ekeha Kurunandana, that's buddhi, and that one purpose is pleasing Krishna. Buddhi yoga, linking with Krishna with that singular purpose in all the various things that that life is made up of. One purpose. Then another term has been used, which is stitta pragya. Who would like to give a definition of stitta pragya? Nandagopal, what's stitta pragya? Fixed intelligence. What is that? How is that described in Bhagavad Gita? Fixed intelligence. Any of our Bhagavad Gita scholars can help him. You don't have to be a Bhagavad Gita scholar, just like anybody out there want to help him. Murari, stitta pragya. How is it used in Bhagavad Gita? It's similar. Fixed intelligence is that it's not moved by such things as attraction and repulsion. In other words, the basis of it is not sense appeal or, you know, I like it, I don't like it. This, it's not ruled by the mind or the senses, fixed intelligence. It's the power of discrimination. It's not moved by circumstance or the mind or the senses. So it's guided by scripture, guided by the quality of goodness, and it's fixed. And based upon stitta pragya, then one can, in any situation, remain neutral to attraction and repulsion and stay fixed on the course that has been assigned, the course, the path to Krishna. And I remember having a little bit of an argument with my Ayurvedic doctor when he started using this word stitta pragya, and I surprised myself by getting animated and say, wait a minute, you know, there's stitta pragya comes from being fixed upon the absolute truth, not otherwise. And the absolute truth is the Supreme Person. Through devotion, one can be a stitta pragya and not otherwise. Meaning, there are mechanical means by which one can try to be like that, you know, discerning, discriminating, that kind of, you know, being intelligent and avoiding the bad things and doing the good things and, you know, being like really strong in your intelligence. But that's still subject to the material energy, which has duality within it. So fixed is where you're fixed in transcendence. That's stitta pragya. So Arjuna asks the question, text 60, what happens if one tries for that but the mind and senses still pull? The senses are so strong and impetuous, O Arjuna, that they forcibly carry away the mind, even of the man of discrimination, who is endeavoring to control them. This is the failure method. One who restrains his senses, keeping them under full control, and fixes his consciousness upon me, is known as a man of stitta pragya, steady intelligence, fixes his consciousness upon me. And, oh, by the way, control the senses. Because you can't fix your consciousness upon Krishna, and the senses are willy-nilly. Sense control and mind control are essential. But then the converse is, for that to be fully effective, there has to be the connection with Krishna. Krishna's transcendental, say, support or strength, to enable that to not be subjected to duality, the material energy. While contemplating the objects of the senses, a person develops attachment for them, that sequence. And then from attachment, and then from such attachment, lust develops, and from lust, anger arises. From anger, complete delusion arises, and from delusion, bewilderment of memory, and when memory is bewildered, intelligence is lost. And when the intelligence is lost, one falls down again into the material pool. Those are the verses preceding. That's the failure. Then back to the success. This is the Buddha Yoga position, where one is striving to control or regulate the senses. This Vidheya Atma. Vidheya comes from vidhis. And vidhis, what are vidhis? Rules and regulations. Vidhi, like Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. The rules and regulations. Rise early in the morning, attend Mangal Arti. Vidhis of Sadhana Bhakti. Videya is one who abides by the vidhis of sadhana bhakti, or vidhis of whatever the process is. Videya Atma, one who follows regulative freedom, one who follows regulated freedom. So the follows the regulations. In Baladev Vidyabhusan's commentary, he gives this dictionary definition of Videya. Nirukti Dictionary says, it means submissive, compliant, controlled, well-behaved, and polite. Sounds like you. And here, Atma, because Atma can mean body, mind, or self, or soul, here he says it means the mind. So where the mind is submissive to the regulations. Specifically, he's indicating us, meaning where the senses may not yet be fully purified in the practice stage of sadhana, the senses may have some attraction for this or that. But the mind becomes submissive to the principle. And when the mind is submissive to the principle, then the senses can be regulated. You know, let's take grahastha life as an example. There are some brahmacharis in the world, and there are some grahasthas in the world. And those who are grahasthas are attracted, female to male, male to female. Hopefully that's the main program going on. And within that grahastha ashram, then there's some regulations to be followed. And that way one can be liberated from the bondage of that attraction by being controlled by the regulations, as an example. And then within that control of the attractions, because the mind is submissive to the vintis, the principles, regulated principles of freedom, in the center of that is the cultivation of bhakti. I'm submitting myself to these regulations because it's pleasing to Krishna. I won't conversely deviate from the principles because it's not pleasing to Krishna. It's not something I can offer to Krishna. And so I just don't do. because I'm controlled by love. I'm controlled by this submission unto Krishna. There's higher stages, but this raga and dvesha, according to Baladeva Vidyabhusan, must be within the mind. The control of attraction and repulsion or aversion is within the mind. It's sufficiently, minimally, again, it can go beyond whether it's just one has no attraction. For the embodied soul to have no attraction for sense objects means that in that state the consciousness is so satisfied, so fixed in happiness, in service to the personality of Godhead, that seeing objects creates no attraction. Because it's, let's take the example of the gopis or any of the residents of Vrindavan. Their interest is so, their love is so matured that when, for example, when they decorate themselves, it's not, you know, fashion. It's how Krishna should be pleased. That's all. And the intensity of contemplation on how Krishna should be pleased varies, the intensity varies, but all the different rasas have the same purpose. Krishna should be pleased. And when love is very mature. So this is teaching before that stage where love isn't so fully matured yet, but the connection is this: Krishna should be pleased. The purpose of each of the activities. So there's sense objects, as is the understanding of bhakti. Bhakti is, Prabhupada explains, it's practical activity. By practical activity, specifically, it means here's the senses, here's the sense objects, interacting senses with sense objects. It's not just a contemplation within the mind. It's not just dhyan. It's bhakti. That contemplation is expressed in the form of activity, like making an offering to the deity, going to the kitchen, cooking for Krishna, etc. Singing in the kirtan. It's practical activity. Going and distributing books, it's practical activity. Going to the workplace and performing your prescribed duty as a householder, it's an act of devotion to Krishna. It's not secular, where there's what you do in the temple and then there's what you do in the rest of your life. Bhagavad Gita is not a secular teaching. It's everything you do has the purpose of pleasing Krishna. And in that way, the senses are engaged with sense objects in practical activity of service unto Krishna. And that way the senses become purified too. But it starts with, before the senses are purified, the contemplation of the mind must be, there is an ideal. What's that? That I should be in the mood of service to Krishna. Why is that? Because constitutionally that's who I am. That's the spirit soul. That's who I am. And then I'm awarded with intelligence, mind, and senses. And those intelligence, mind, and senses should be engaged in service to Krishna. And then there's some sense objects out there. So we interact with the sense objects out there for the purpose of satisfying Krishna. And if there's some other desire, it's subordinated by the regulations. It's just not appropriate. Those of you that are, do you like Rupa Goswami? Hope there's some people here that like Rupa Goswami. You know that these two companion verses that describe renunciation. There's the Palgu Vairagya, and there's the Yukta Vairagya type. Palgu Vairagya is false or artificial or incomplete renunciation. And that is where objects are given up even though they have a connection with Krishna. And then there's the complete renunciation, and that is Hari Sambandho Vastuna, those things that are in relation to Hari, they're utilized in service to Hari. And the verse begins, Anasaktasya Vishayan, which is really easy. It's the next line that's a little delicate. Anasaktasya means without attachments, the same as this, Raga Dvesha Vamuktais too, without attraction or repulsion. That's anasaktasya, vishayan. Vishaya means sense gratification. Yatarham upayunjitaha, that's the delicate part. As much as necessary. Yatarham upayunjitaha, with dedication to Krishna. Let me find the exact definition or word for word meaning. Yatarham is according to suitability, or sometimes is translated as far as possible. As far as possible, or according to suitability, means each person, each of us, may, in order to be steady in devotional service, may have different needs. I, as a sannyasi, may have different needs than a householder, for example, to remain steady. So what is suitable for me may not be suitable for the next person. For me to be steady, for that other person to be steady. But it's not just ashram specific, it's also person specific. Let's just say the vrata that you maintain on the Ekadasi day, as an example. So some persons, yatarhan, the principle is that you should reduce bodily necessities and increase hearing and chanting. That's the principle, because it's an auspicious day. So we minimize, but what's not in some artificial way. There was a period of time when many devotees, especially some of our leading devotees, were really into Ekadasi and observing Nirjala Ekadasi, every Ekadasi. And it's very nice. But then some younger devotees were trying in an unsuitable manner to do that also. And it wasn't very nice. I remember when Brahmachari, they found him in the walk-in refrigerator at night, because he had tried Nirjala Ekadasi and it wasn't suited to him. So he just went into the refrigerator and he offered everything and started eating. Fortunately, he hadn't yet passed out inside the walk-in refrigerator. They found him inside. So, as far as possible, we do without, and we accept only what is necessary for maintaining a steady standard. Yatarham upayunjitaha, engaging. in devotional service and engaging the energy, the external energy. As is suited for your situation. And there should always be, for each of us, regardless of ashram or age or whatever position in devotional service, there should always be an aspiration to connect qualitatively more with Krishna and time-wise quantitatively more with hearing and chanting and the direct devotional activity, and quantitatively minimize or simplify our involvement with the material energy. It will happen naturally as bhakti grows. Somebody was asking me, what are some standard measures by which I can see whether I'm advancing or not in Krishna consciousness? And there's two very simple ones. One is the attraction for sense activity, material sense activity, is diminishing. Even the contemplation of such things is diminishing. I don't, whatever it is that somebody has some attraction for, whether it's cinema or shopping or, you know, reading other literature or internet browsing or whatever someone's little thing is, just the attraction for that is slackening. And instead, I'm contemplating how I can get some more time for reading Srimad Bhagavatam, or for singing this new bhajan that I've learned, or sloka memorization, or time to discuss topics about Krishna with my favorite Krishna katha buddies. And like, so it's something that I read, and hear from them something that they read, and I want to find more of that happiness. So that's the other side. Vishvaksena kata ruchi. Nanda Gopal quoted that verse for us the other day. When it's a sign that there's eagerness to hear the topics about Krishna. So let me find the time. More time. And the time is always there. It's just how we use it. We have our duties, but if the desire is strong, you'll find even when doing your duties you can be hearing. You'll see as you progress in Krishna consciousness how to utilize time in that way. It's one of the symptoms of advancing in Krishna. Here's a very nice appreciation, very liberal appreciation Prabhupada gave at one time to one of our devotees very early in the movement, a pujari. Pujari's name is Rukmini, Prabhupada's disciple. And she was our head pujari for Radha Govinda for some time. And she wrote Prabhupada a letter describing what she was doing as the pujari and her ideas of the next festivals coming up for serving Radha Govinda. And Prabhupada said, "Prabhupada, there just isn't time in the day to do all these things that I'd like to do for Radha Govinda." And Prabhupada wrote back saying, "This is very nice to see how you have attained the stage of Bhava Bhakti, where you don't want to waste even a moment in Krishna's service. You're very anxious. Avyarta kalatvam. You're very anxious to use your time very, very carefully in Krishna's service." That's a sign of advancing. You don't want to waste time. You want to maximize that precious commodity of time in Krishna's service. And when that eagerness is there, it's protection from the allure of Maya. You can say the opposite. When that eagerness isn't there, the allure of Maya captures your attention. And you begin contemplating and all these other things that are mentioned in the prior verses, even when you're trying to control the mind and senses. So the spiritual principle that's being indicated here is attraction for Krishna's service. And that's the yuktam vairagya. Attraction for Krishna's service means that we can have a very nice place like this nice temple. I mean, I haven't seen the Brahmachari ashram situation. Is it the same as before the construction and after construction? Same. Exact same. So it's all only the guest rooms and other people that had a nicer place. You didn't get it. That once upon a time you didn't have the building that we're sitting in right now. And the brahmacharis stayed somewhere. And then you built this. Do the brahmacharis stay in the same situation? Exact same situation. No change. Well, that's nice. And it's very humble and simple, right? Just basics. Well, that's nice. That's very nice. Brahmachari life is nice like that. And then our guests have a little better facility, a little more of it and a little bigger and stuff like that than before. So, anyway, Prabhupada would describe that the purpose of the ashram is for cultivation of Krishna consciousness, not for comfort. So someone may think, oh, this is great. I'll just come and stay at the temple. I have a place to stay and I have my meals. I don't have to go to work every day. A free ride. Now, I'm not saying anybody here is thinking like that, but some persons may think like that. Prabhupada explicitly used the word, it's not a hotel. It's not a place, it's a place for spiritual culture. And when there's a place for spiritual culture, keeping things very simple is very nice. And I'm just going to read very quickly. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's short commentary. Compliments of Bhanu Swami, the translator. He writes, if one conquers the mind, there is no fault, even if the senses are not subdued. In 8 verses, the Lord answers the last question, how does the stitta pragya engage in action of the senses? If your intelligence is fixed and steady, what goes on the sense and mind platform? Paragraph. It has just been said that even if one has conquered the external senses, if he does not offer his mind to me, his spiritual endeavor will be a failure. That person offering his mind to me, Vidheya Atma, again the Atma indicating the mind in this case, Vidheya Atma, submissive to the vidhis that are given by Krishna, means submissive to Krishna, at least within the mind, saying yes, this is very nice. I accept the position. Achieves destruction of the impurities of the mind, such as attachment to pleasure. Even though experiencing, or charan, the forbidden sense objects by the senses, he finally attains a pure mind, prasadam, free from the appearance of contamination of attraction to sense objects. This is because the senses are now devoid of attraction and repulsion under the control of the mind, Atma Vashyai, which is offered to me. So this is these are principles that are involved in the in any practice of yoga. In their matured stage, they're found in the bhakti process also. If you consider, you know, kind of analytically, when it comes to let's say, a beginning practitioner being given the opportunity to chant and to come and attend the classes and other kinds of beneficial regulations, the vidhis of sadhana bhakti. By taking shelter of the vidhis, the mind, by saying yes to that, gradually the residual impurity is there in the mind becomes purified. By bringing the senses to those activities, the senses become purified. The objects themselves are not a source of misery because one is not indulging in them in the contemplation of being an enjoyer of them, because that contemplation of enjoyment brings misery. Yehi sam sparsha chab bhoga dukha yonaya evate. The contemplation of enjoyment of sense objects brings misery, although it's not supposed to. It's supposed to bring enjoyment, but it brings misery. I mean, every time. Although there may be some contact with the sense object that says, ooh, that's nice. The abandonment of the spiritual well-being is taking place. The involvement in the world of duality is taking place. And sure enough, the other feature of duality makes its appearance. The misery makes its appearance. It's built into the system. It's there by design. So recognizing that problematic situation, what's a good soul to do? What is a stitta pragya to do? By steadying my intelligence, I can see there's misery in this realm, so maybe I should just like shut down. Well, that's not what's being advocated. The reasons given, one may try to shut down. But within the mind, if there's still some contemplation, the sequence will follow and one's going to fall from the spiritual position. So not falling from the spiritual position is by the commitment of yoga, of linking those activities, starting with the mind, the commitment to a higher principle, service to Krishna. I may not be fully realized in it yet, but in principle I accept it. Those of you that weren't here with us, I'll just say it again, and for those that were, it's just a refresh. The Pramanda Brahmite Kona Bhagyavan Jeev Guru Krishna Prasadi Bhai Bhakti Lata Bij is a verse spoken by Lord Chaitanya to Rupa Goswami, where he explains how bhakti begins. And bhakti begins when one becomes fortunate, Bhagyavan, by getting from the combined mercy of Guru and Krishna this very special thing, Bhakti Lata Bija. Bija means seed. The seed of the Bhakti Lata, the creeper of devotion, we discussed. Our acharyas say that seed is faith in devotional teachings, the scriptures, our Bhakti Shastras. So therefore, we like to have Bhakti Shastri classes so people can nurture that seed by hearing and chanting more about it, and it grows. Plant the seed in your heart like a gardener, Lord Chaitanya said to Rupa Goswami, and then water the seed by the process of hearing and chanting. Come to the Bhakti Shastri class and water that seed of bhakti. So it's some faith in both the teachings and then the objective. What's the objective? Connecting with Krishna in love, in loving service. So having some acceptance in faith. I may be down here. I may be a struggling neophyte. But I by mercy of the devotees, I have faith in this principle. And faith in this principle, the mind accepting the principle, then I can engage myself in devotional service. In the neophyte stage, it's a little unsteady, it's a little shaky, anishtita. But as purification takes place, it becomes more and more progressively steady, until the point where even there may be some other attractions or anarthas within the heart, they won't act because bhakti is so strong they can't act. That's the nishtha stage. So what this verse is describing, according to the stage one is in the elevation of bhakti principle, it's describing the bhakti principle. That's Bodhi Yoga. Acceptance of that principle of elevation, this is how a Stitta Pragya lives. In the sadhana stage, and in the spontaneous stage, and the bhava stage, and the prema stage. It looks different just because it's more mature. But the principle is being discussed. Similar to Rupa Goswami's description of detachment or renunciation on the strength of attachment to Krishna and serving Krishna. Okay. So any discussion or questions?
Hare Krishna. You have already explained, I missed it. What is the internal contemplation of a devotee when he is dealing with the activities of passion or ignorance? How can an aspiring devotee apply that?
What's the internal contemplation of a devotee when they see that the modes of passion or ignorance are operating?
Yeah, and when he is dealing with them practically, how can we apply at our level?
Well, it depends on the devotee. One, from the view of Bhagavad Gita, one thing that one can do is observe the modes of nature at work. And through taking that position of contemplation or reflection through the lens of knowledge, some detachment takes place. So, take your example. I'm a beginning devotee, and I'm practicing devotional service, and things are going along kind of nicely. And then something happens that makes me angry. So I'm feeling some anger. So someone is irritating me, or something is irritating me. Now, I can just I can try to pretend it's not irritating me, or I can just keep getting irritated, or I can step back through the lens of Bhagavad Gita and look at what's happening. So there's me observing the anger. There's detachment. And the anger is coming from duality. It's passion, attempting to be an enjoyer that didn't happen. I feel frustrated. It's the mode of ignorance. This is the mode of ignorance happening as a result of contact with the mode of passion. So now the feeling subsides. It still may be there. Whatever it was that happened that irritated me, I just distanced myself somewhat from that irritation by knowledge, by contemplation through the lens, the viewing of the circumstance with knowledge. So now I have another choice. I can turn my attention to something else, like, you know, some service that I was engaged in before this irritating thing happened. I can just absorb myself in my devotional service, thinking, I can't do anything about that irritating thing. I mean, it happened the other night. I don't know how many of you experienced it, but the gentleman that does the construction started drilling at about 10 o'clock at night and went to about 2:30 in the morning. Did anybody else hear that the other night? Just me. Maybe it was right under my door or something. And there was anything I could do about it. I didn't sleep well. I can't go ask the gentleman to... I couldn't even know where he was. Apparently you worked it out, so they stopped it. So what do? You can just get irritated and... I just got up and chanted. Took a little rest during the day. More than a little rest, because I didn't sleep much. But you know, then some measure was taken the next. So you take practical steps to address whatever the circumstance is, if it makes sense to address it. And meanwhile, you absorb yourself in that which you know is pleasing to Krishna. For example, and so much depends upon the circumstance. But detachment through knowledge, jnana vairagya, and then yukta vairagya is even better. Just absorption in devotional service. Does that help? You have a particular irritation in mind? Particular mode of nature or feature? What's your favorite one? Never mind. You spoke about mind controlled by principles. I am seeing that although my life is becoming more regulated and I am trying sincerely to follow rules and regulations of bhakti, however, when I try to focus my mind on the principle of pleasing Guru and Krishna, it goes all over and jumps from one topic to another. I understand it will take time for mind to purify, but what principle should I try to apply to make my mind more focused? Well, just keep abhyasa. I mean, to do things for Guru and Krishna is not... It's a different platform than rule and regulation. It's a platform of love. Bhaktivinoda Thakur teaches this. Maybe this person should, for the time being, stick with rules and regulations and not deviate from rules and regulations. But attachment for serving with love comes from hearing, and then, as we discussed the other day, that which you hear, you try to understand the valuable thing that you've received through hearing. And when that understanding of the value of what you've received touches your heart, then something happens. You feel gratitude. And when you feel gratitude, your heart is further moved to do things from that place of gratitude rather than just rule and regulation. Is that making sense? Hello? Does it make sense? This is the okay. Videya Atma is when one is submissive to the rules. Being submissive to the rules is a beginning. It helps one come to goodness from these lower modes of nature. And when I do like that, and I feel I'm becoming purified and elevated, then I can start to hear the message from the teachings and the teachers in a way that I wasn't able to hear before. And then I can start to understand better the value. And then attachment for the teacher and the teachings, not just the rules and regulations. But again, it's something like this position of faith that if I understand in principle the process of bhakti is something that's going to carry me from the struggle with material existence into the realm of Krishna, and it makes sense to me, it resonates with me, I have some faith in that, then I can move. But I'm just repeating some of the things from previous discussions. There has to be a proper sambandhagyan, a proper spiritual conception of who I am and what's going on in the realm of bhakti, because otherwise it's very unsteady. It's the mind saying yes, and then the mind changes, and then the mind is saying no. When we're accepting Krishna consciousness only on the platform of the mind through the regulations of bhakti, it's unsteady, because the mind is unsteady. It has to go deeper, as this other discussion, in that now somewhat elevated, purified mode of goodness, a bit more state, the light can come in more, and then I can see more clearly what it is that is being given. So teachers have to be patient, just like parents have to be patient with their children. And gradually, a sincere student or a sincere child can understand, my teacher really loves me, and my parents really love me, and I want to do, because I know that what they're saying is good for me, and so I accept on the platform of this attachment for the teacher and ultimately Krishna, because the teacher is delivering Krishna and Krishna's message to me. So they're helping me connect with Krishna. How kind. Like that. That's the bhakti principle. Then it's no longer my effort to follow regulations, it's Krishna's mercy is coming into my life. What kindness this is. This is really wonderful. What is the meaning of purification of mind? On other side, mind is material thing. Then, when soul goes to spiritual world, what happens to mind? It also goes? Well, a conditioned living entity is awarded with coverings of two categories, gross and subtle. Mind is part of the subtle covering. But other than the gross and subtle coverings, there is a spirit soul. And a spirit soul has the faculties of thinking and feeling and willing. On the soul platform, those are functions of mind. The material mind is thinking, feeling, willing about separate from Krishna things. Of course, there's nothing separate from Krishna. So it's an illusory thinking, feeling, and willing. So in short, no, the material mind, here's in the language of Lord Kapila, the material mind is dissolved by the process of bhakti. Material contemplations end, and spiritual contemplations entirely are experienced. The soul does think and feel and will in relation to Krishna. It's spiritual thinking, feeling, and willing. That whoever wrote this, that answer your question? Anything else? Yes. Go ahead.
Why does mind want to cheat us?
Why does mind want to cheat us? That's an interesting question. Let me ask you a question. Why do we want to cheat ourselves?
That we want to be happy, maybe.
Yeah, but happy is something that's because of the soul, then cheating doesn't make us happy. So why do we want to cheat ourselves? Because we've accepted an illusory conception. And what's the nature of that illusory conception? There's happiness apart from Krishna. That's the illusory conception. One of the four essential verses of the entire Srimad Bhagavatam says this. This is Lord Vishnu speaking to Lord Brahma. And he says, whatever it is that one sees as having artha or value separate from me, know that to be my illusory energy. Happiness apart from Krishna is Maya. It doesn't exist. So the mind is attracted to that. It's cheating the soul. So what's behind the mind cheating the soul is the soul's attitude towards Krishna. What's the soul's attitude toward Krishna? I want to be the enjoyer. That's dvesha. Instead, raga, let me be the enjoyer. But you're in the way, Krishna, you're in the way. Because you're always the enjoyer. So I'm going to turn my back on you and forget you. The problem is our attitude toward Krishna. That's why the mind tricks us. Because we've got an attitude toward Krishna. So he gives this situation where we can try happiness apart from him. It doesn't exist. Like water in desert. By definition, a desert is where there is no water. And searching for water in the desert is a fool's errand. Searching for happiness where there is no happiness, as the mind is looking for it, apart from Krishna. That's why. The soul has an attitude, rebellious attitude toward Krishna. Now what to do? Change the attitude. Not so easy. So we follow regulations until that stage can come when we actually are hankering for happiness in relation to Krishna as his servant. His happiness is our happiness. That's the happiness of love, isn't it? The happiness of the beloved is the happiness of the lover. That doesn't exist in the material world. It's a spiritual quality entirely. Okay? Okay, I guess we're... Yes, last question? We have two questions, okay.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Maharaj, somewhere I like the question which I am asking, somewhere I know the answer, but still to reconfirm I want to ask it again. Like you said that when we accept Krishna consciousness on the basis of the mind, on external principles, just on rules and regulations, so it is very difficult. So we should have a deeper understanding. So can
steadiness is difficult. Doing initially is not so difficult. It's fun. It's just not steady. And then we start to struggle and wonder what happened. And then we get a little panicky and then we start following again. And then, but it's just on the mind. And then, because like it's, we're avoiding pain and tribulation and suffering. So we like become a good devotee again for a while. And then things get nice again and we, you know, relax. It's the platform of selfishness, not a platform of devotion. It's not necessarily with the proper spiritual conception of what it means to be engaged in service to Krishna. We embrace it out of convenience. We don't like to suffer. Okay?
Maharaj, just one more thing. You said that we should have a deeper understanding of Krishna consciousness. It should go deep inside. So,
yeah.
What is that deep understanding? If you can give little point description.
It's on the platform of the soul. It's not theoretical, but it's practical. You know, it's just use different words to say the same thing, but it's from the heart. It's something that has touched you, and you have become moved on a platform of the soul or the platform of the heart. It's, you can't move from there. Circumstances may change, but that doesn't change. It's a deep, that's the adjective, acceptance, fundamental acceptance. A principle that you live your life by. Let's take an example of honesty. People know it doesn't feel right if you lie, but some people lie. And they're compulsive. They can't even tell the truth. It's just they're compulsive liars. And then you catch them in the act of you said this, and then you said that, and then you said another thing. You know, and then they'll turn right around and say yet another thing. Because it's just, you know, they've lost their bearings. They don't feel good about it. It's just, they do it compulsively. Okay? You've met such people. I know such people. So deep is where it's not soft and, you know, movable like that. It's something that's so ingrained so fundamentally or deeply. You just can't tell a lie, or you can't steal, or, you know, those are moralities I'm speaking about now. But now there's another platform of deep platform of truth. That's the absolute truth. That truth upon which all of the truths rest. And that's Krishna. So that's the deep platform. The connection with Krishna platform. And then you're fully protected. Influences may come this way or that way. You can't leave that position of Krishna's shelter. That's a deep platform. Whatever the cost may be, I'll pay any price except for that. Depart from Krishna. And then that means everything that's going to strengthen that connection with Krishna, I accept. Surrender. And things that are detrimental to that connection with Krishna, I reject. Just push it aside, throw it away. In favor of this, the higher principle, acceptance of Krishna. Same as the verse we discussed this afternoon, anasaktasya vishayan, ananyashintayan tomam. Same principle. Jagatananda, you have something?
Maharaj, can I request you to read, I think you read Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary or Baladev Vidyabhushana's commentary, where he was...
What's your question?
Where he's writing about that unless one really brings the mind to the realms of devotional service...
That's Baladev's.
So I would like to hear that again. It seems that...
Want me to read it again?
Yeah. And...
Yeah, it's fine. It has just been said that even if one has conquered the external senses, if he does not offer his mind to me, his spiritual endeavor will be a failure. I read those verses.
Mm-hmm.
That person offering his mind to me, Vidheyatma, achieves destruction of the impurities of the mind such as attachment to pleasure. Whatever, you know, the sensation of... There's a higher pleasure than sense pleasure. Even though experiencing charan, the forbidden sense objects by the senses, he finally attains a pure mind. Prasadam. Free from the appearance of contamination of attraction to sense objects. This is because the senses are now devoid of attraction and repulsion under the control of the mind, which is offered to me. Nice, huh?
Yeah. And I was connecting this verse with what Krishna says in 340, the mind and the intelligence and the senses are where the lust resides.
Yes.
And here in this purport also Srila Prabhupada talks twice where he says, like even the last sentence, this consciousness is the causeless mercy of the Lord which the devotee can achieve in spite of his being attached to the sensual platform. So does that mean he's talking about not the mind is attached to the sensual platform, but the senses are still not completely...
Yes. Before there can be complete sense control, there must be acceptance of the mind, of a principle, a value, a virtue, a higher position. It's like your son. You know, senses are moving here and there. But if somehow the mind can take shelter of something that's valuable, whatever that might be, like pleasing you and his mother, then the senses may be attracted, but the senses can be controlled. I'm thinking right now of a situation where I was at a home program and we were sitting on the floor and I had a projector off of my laptop showing something on the wall. And there was a little boy sitting over here. And the power strip was there and his hand started to go to touch the power strip and fiddle. So I just caught it out of the corner of my eye. The mother raised her finger like this and went like this, and he stopped. So the senses were controlled by the power of the love of the mother, advising him. Because of the love for the mother, he could follow and be protected from, getting electric shock or causing a disruption of something or something. She didn't have to say a word. I was impressed. Because children generally don't respond like that. He was little one. So love and affection are more powerful than a hammer. To try to physically restrain a child that wants to touch something and double, triple, quadruple, they'll want to go back to that something just by saying no. And you turn your back and there they are again. for whatever the, you know, whatever the impulse is that make children do things. So within the yoga process, control of the mind, faith in teachings and teachers, extremely important. And one should not tamper with that. One should carefully cultivate that. Very important principle. Okay. I think we'll end. Thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.